As a follow-up to our discussion about the situation in Zimbabwe on yesterday's show, we thought we would devote today's underreported segment to what has happened to the Zimbabweans in one of the refugee camps in South Africa. Joining me now to explain why the South African government decided earlier this week to close that camp in Musina Town is Rachel Cohen, the head of mission in South Africa for Doctors Without Borders, which had a clinic in the camp, and I'm pleased to welcome her to this week's underreported. Hello.
Hi, thank you for having me.
How did Doctors Without Borders learn that the camp was being shut down? Were you told by the government?
Well, in fact, we were told by the government, but only about 12 hours before people started being forcibly removed and told that they had to find their way to another location or to return to Zimbabwe. I should probably clarify that although the showground, which is kind of an open field in Musina Town, just a few kilometers from the border with Zimbabwe, looked a lot like a refugee camp, it is not considered one whatsoever by the South African authorities, because they consider Zimbabweans essentially to be voluntary economic migrants and specifically do not recognize that they may be seeking asylum in South Africa.
So, and is that the reason?
The place where they've been congregating do not meet any basic minimum standards for international humanitarian assistance, and people have been living in very harsh and unhygienic conditions there.
So they close it down saying that this is a harsh environment and they would prefer not to have that on there in South Africa? I mean, what is the reason they're giving for closing it down?
Because we've been putting pressure on them for the last several months to find an alternative and more humane solution for the 3,000 to 4,000 people that have been sleeping there every single night. They are now using that as a kind of justification for why they closed it. The problem is they don't offer any alternative for the people who have been congregating there. They tell them they must go somewhere else to line up to get their asylum-seeking papers, which is why people are coming to the showground to begin with. But then they haven't offered any alternative for the people in terms of shelter, in terms of food, in terms of medical care, and in terms of any other form of basic assistance.
How many of these camps for Zimbabwean refugees are there in South Africa? Is the showground in Musina Town the only one that the government has shut down?
Well, there are no camps for Zimbabweans in South Africa. It's estimated here that over the past several years, 3 million Zimbabweans have fled the country and mainly to South Africa. And what is very difficult to explain about the situation of Zimbabweans in South Africa is that actually their invisibility is their protection. And I say that because Zimbabweans are extremely vulnerable to arrest, to deportation. The South African government has a very aggressive deportation strategy, and also to xenophobic violence, which we saw last year in May when actually tens of thousands of Zimbabweans and other foreign nationals were displaced after very brutal xenophobic attacks in Johannesburg and other major cities throughout the country. So there are only two places where there's a very visible concentration of Zimbabweans. That's at the showground in Musina and also at what's called the Central Methodist Church right in the heart of Johannesburg. And in both of those locations, Doctors Without Borders teams, we have been providing medical care for Zimbabweans who are seeking refuge in those two locations.
Why were they subject to those attacks? Is there a lot of resentment against the Zimbabweans?
There is a lot of resentment, obviously, as in any society, when the basic needs of South Africans are not looked after. They look to kind of the person below them to lay the blame. So, yes, there is a certain amount of resentment. But it's important, I think, that the South African government does not recognize Zimbabweans as people who are fleeing as a matter of survival, and not because they're just here to find another job. Or for a kind of greener pastures. And we do see people coming with extremely serious health conditions. So a number of our patients, we do about 2,000 consultations each month in Musina and another 2,000 each month in Johannesburg. And we see a whole range of illnesses, upper respiratory tract infections, a lot of HIV, sexually transmitted infections, tuberculosis, and of course, towards the end of the year, a number of cases of cholera, which we diagnosed and treated both in Musina and in Johannesburg.
Well, HIV/AIDS is said to affect about 20% of the Zimbabwean population, and that cholera epidemic has killed around 4,000 people. The latest World Health Organization estimate is that another 83,000 people have the disease. So are those conditions that have gone untreated in Zimbabwe, and is there a fear that it will spread to South Africa if these people are allowed in?
Well, I mean, I think that there's a lot of things that the cholera epidemic showed us. And actually, just about 2 weeks ago, Doctors Without Borders released a report on the deteriorating humanitarian situation inside Zimbabwe. Our colleagues inside Zimbabwe have been treating massive numbers of people with cholera, about 75% of all of the cases reported, so roughly 45,000 cholera cases. And we are also providing antiretroviral therapy for 26,000 people living with HIV in Zimbabwe. But a lone international aid organization absolutely cannot fill all the gaps in a country which has a health system that has completely imploded under the political upheaval and economic meltdown that that country has been going through over the past decade. So while there are sort of small band-aids all over the place in Zimbabwe, and not only from our organization but from many others, we still see people fleeing in large numbers. And they're fleeing for lots of reasons. They're fleeing because they can't find the health care they need. They're fleeing because there's no food on the shelves. They're fleeing because there's an absolutely staggering level of inflation, and people can hardly, there's hardly any value to the money there, something like 231% inflation, which is just almost inconceivable. Yes, when we see them on our side of the border in South Africa, we do see a number of different needs, and of course there are concerns about what those health needs are that might actually have an effect in South Africa. But I do want to say that the cholera epidemic and even the numbers of cases of HIV is really only kind of the tip of the iceberg of what is a situation that's been spiraling out of control in Zimbabwe for many years.
Is this situation exacerbated by the South African government's reluctance to pressure Robert Mugabe to change his policies or step down?
No, I don't really want. I can't really speculate much on the kind of political dynamic, of course, in our region. I just can tell you that what we see, what our team see every single day, is certainly the consequence of a complete failure on the part of pretty much everyone to adequately provide assistance within Zimbabwe. And certainly, what our team sees here in South Africa is a failure of the government of South Africa to attend to the basic humanitarian assistance and protection needs of Zimbabweans. And by that, I mean not only provision of very basic services, but also some form of legal protection for Zimbabweans who are seeking refuge in South Africa. Instead of providing that assistance and that protection, the government of South Africa aggressively deports them and makes them live in a kind of constant state of fear and anxiety that drives them underground. And in the case of cholera, for us to find the cases and be able to treat them effectively.
I'm talking with Rachel Cohn on Underreported Today. She's the head of mission in South Africa's Doctors Without Borders. We're talking about the closing down of an informal refugee camp in Messina. But the Zimbabweans are leaving their homes because they have no food. Does that mean that even though the situation in South Africa is awful, it's still better than what they face back home?
Well, I mean, I think that's a very good point, and we're always asking ourselves, you know, as the authorities in South Africa tell us that people are here voluntarily, we're always asking them, why on earth would they live in such conditions if they had really a choice to go home? As we know, inside Zimbabwe, food shortages are expected to increase as we approach the peak of the hunger season, and the Doctors Without Borders teams that are working in Epworth, outside of Harare, saw a doubling of the number of children in our malnutrition program there from December to January. So we do see kind of no end in sight, despite the pronouncements and sort of the euphoria that followed the political revolution there in the last couple of weeks. It's not going to happen overnight, but this country is rebuilt, unfortunately. And in the meantime, both within Zimbabwe and in South Africa, Zimbabweans have enormous humanitarian needs, and they are very, very vulnerable to the kind of aggression and the kind of, I would say, brutality that they've been subjected to when they think they're coming to a place to find safety.
And it's also a physically taxing journey to get into South Africa, isn't it? They have to cross the Limpopo River.
Yeah, this the incredibly perilous journey, I would say, for the people that come across. I've spoken to a number of our patients that that have had to cross the river 2 weeks ago. We learned of a group of 500 women and children who had attempted to cross the Limpopo River to South Africa, and they instead fell kind of prey to these local bandits, kind of mafia that run the border, tell you that they're going to bring you across the border safely, and instead they rape and beat and rob the people who are trying to cross. So a couple of nights ago at the Central Methodist Church in Central Joburg, where we have a clinic, we heard that five of the women who were trying to cross had been raped, and two babies were literally taken off their mother's backs and thrown into the river. So to describe that kind of journey as somehow, you know, voluntary is to completely mischaracterize the situation with Zimbabwe.
If it weren't for Doctors Without Borders, would these people be getting any treatment? Was Doctors Without Borders the
care.
I was going to add, and was Doctors Without Borders the only aid organization that was operating at the Messina camp?
There have been two other organizations, the South African Red Cross and Save the Children, that have been operating at the showground in Messina, but there isn't any other medical organization. So, in fact, we're the only ones that are able to provide medical care for the population that is congregating there. Theoretically, Zimbabweans should have access to South Africa's health system, but of course, we hear stories every single day of Zimbabweans who are arrested and deported on their way to the hospital, and they also face, of course, this is a little bit less severe, but extremely important still for them, they face a lot of xenophobic kind of abuse, I would say, and discrimination when they do try to seek health services within South Africa's healthcare system. That's not across the board, but the theory that South Africa's constitution guarantees access to healthcare for all who live in it, which is the promise of South Africa's constitution, is certainly not applied universally in South Africa, and Zimbabweans are extremely vulnerable.
And you said earlier that the South Africans are not treating these people people who are worthy of political asylum, so they can't go through the normal process of applying for a political asylum?
Well, actually, that's why so many people have accumulated at the showground in Messina. Prior to July 2008, we had mobile medical teams that were working along the eastern border, working on farms, trying to find, actually, the thousands of Zimbabweans that we knew were kind of hiding in the bush and hiding in the townships, but who were afraid to come forward because they were afraid of what they might face in terms of especially deportation. When the Department of Home Affairs in South Africa opened their refugee reception office, that's what they call it, in the showground, suddenly thousands of Zimbabweans started to come forward and congregate each night, and it became, although it was extremely unhygienic and overcrowded and not at all an ideal situation, it became a place where people could line up in order to apply for asylum. And tens of thousands, I've heard something in the neighborhood of 35,000 people in about 5 months applied for asylum, but only a tiny fraction, and I really mean less than about 50 asylum-seeking applications have actually been granted asylum, refugee status. It's just a sign not only of the dysfunction of South Africa's asylum-seeking process, but also a sign of the sort of political orientation, let's say, of the South African government towards towards Zimbabweans who are seeking refuge in that country.
Just one more thing, and we have very little time. What was the process of closing down the camp? Was it orderly or was it chaotic?
It was totally chaotic. Tuesday morning, the authorities arrived at the showground and they started dividing Zimbabweans into different groups according to their legal status, their gender, and their age. So we saw women with children, pregnant women, and unaccompanied minors kind of removed forcibly from a special location where they had been put that was slightly a little bit more protected than just the open area. They just ordered all of the temporary shelters that people had put up, just behind us some plastic sheeting that they had put up just to be a bit covered at night. They ordered them to be taken down, and they also ordered that the Zimbabweans burn all of their own temporary shelter materials before they could begin the process of applying for an asylum-seeking permit. And there were about 1,000 people that were processed yesterday, another 700 or so today. And rather than being given a permit of 6 months, which would have allowed them to be safely in the
country, we have to leave it there, unfortunately. Underreported guest has been Rachel Cohn, head of mission in South Africa's Doctors Without Borders. Thank you so much.